Drawing it in hopes that none of you people that have never been involved ever let this happen to you. Don't ever let your government do this to you. Okay.
You want to explain it a bit, Charles?
It's me holding a dead body, smiling. It's on the back of my armored cavalry assault vehicle. It's there because everyone in our platoon took two bodies, put them on the back ramp, drove them through a village for show, and dumped them off the edge of the village.
Does anybody else have anything particularly they want to add to this?
Well, the brutalizing effect it has on yourself. I know myself, we were out on Eagle flights. This is just where a small unit of men go out on helicopters, and they're set down and they sweep a couple thousand meters and they're picked up from their objective and go to another area. You're just out for a day in the object of it is to try and catch the Viet Cong, you know, by a series of quick movements, like, you know, jumping, leapfrogging. We'd been in contact all day, no matter where we went. We didn't produce very good results. Choppers finally came in to pick us up, to take us back. And we sat, I was sitting on the helicopter. I was the machine gunner at the time. I was sitting in the door of the helicopter, and then all of a sudden I felt the crew chief kick me out of the helicopter. You know, unload, unload. I look over and see one helicopter with its blades starting to slow down, so I figured that it had been shot down. As soon as I got off the helicopter, I got out of underneath the blades and I noticed there was a farmer in the distance, about 400 or 500 meters, riding his water buffalo back from the field, and I jumped off the helicopter and opened up at him with my machine gun. He was just a civilian farmer. And, I attempted, you know, I shot at him, but thank God I missed him, you know. After I did it, you know, it's just a severe frustration of being shot at all day. You know, then attempting to go home and, like, you know, that, you know, you get shot down, so we had to stay there to protect the helicopter, and we'd have to continue fighting. Like, the attempt I made, you know, just to kill an individual. The attempt I made...
Why don't you go over and risk your life?
Yeah. If you can lead the charge, lady, man. They
you and Don Lobsinger can go over there and fight if you want.
Please,
I'm
panel.
Not going to.
Panel, let us not get involved.
Let's just ignore the idiots, okay? Any idiots who walk in here, let's just ignore them.
But Ron, perhaps this is the perfect time to go a bit into what you want to talk about. Part of the reason for the attitude of Americans is sort of a racial thing. We're seeing it right now. We don't understand Vietnam. We think they're less than we are. We don't understand their personnel. We don't understand their customs. We don't understand their entire culture. Ron, would you like to talk about it?
Again, I arrived in Vietnam in 66 in the summer months, just before the monsoons. The first night we were there, we were going on convoy because we were trying to get the 4th Division through to Dragon Mountain Base Camp near Pleiku. And this has already been mentioned, but I'd like to add to it. I saw sea rations being thrown. I threw sea rations, I'm not proud of it, at kids. At anybody I could hit, I saw people pointing weapons. Now, this is the first night. This is This is the first night that we're there. Saw people pointing weapons at people, you know, just trying to scare them a little bit. Saw people locking and loading. And we finally initially put up base camp and started talking about the women we were going to screw and the people we're going to kill. See, support is really boring. You don't get to kill anybody out there. You just get the support, whatever. Now, about a month after that, these are not isolated examples. These happen all the time. And this is increasingly growing worse. Now, this is 66, mind you. I was in a tea room, a bar, in Pleiku, one afternoon. I saw an officer complaining about a water drink. He picked up the Vietnamese girl that he thought had watered the drink. He grabbed her by the neck and lifted her up. He was about 6 foot or more. Lifted her up, raised back, and slapped her hard. And you know what? They carried her out of that room. I don't know what happened to her, but everybody sat back down and started drinking. And, you know, nothing was thought about it. This happened all the time, abuse of the people. It was like we were uncaged animals. We were bored, bored, and we wanted to do something. It was, you know, it's like the guy coming to the big city, you know, he wants to do something from a small town or something. We were able to create inflation in Pleiku. We were able to raise, well, as an analogy, it would be like you trying to purchase a regular $100 apartment, let's say, if they have them anymore around here, for $300. Now, that's beyond my means. I think it's beyond a lot of people's means. These people could not purchase apartments. They couldn't buy food anymore because we were paying whatever, you know, we were the traffic, and we paid whatever the people wanted, you know, out of us. And the prices just kept going. Finally, the general put Pleiku off limits because of the inflation, because we were driving the women to prostitution so they could feed their kids. We were driving all the people to corrupt activities just to keep alive. We were driving these people to this. This is racism. We were the supreme race. These people were nothing.
One question which has often been asked, if this is the way we feel about the war, then why are we here now rather than before we went?
I was a hawk.
John, you and I have talked about this to some considerable depth. You mentioned you have just been over recently. You mentioned being in some of the moratorium mobilization things. Would you care to read that letter for us?
Well, I'm different from some of the people on this panel in that I was very against the war before I went to Vietnam. I marched in the two moratoriums of 69. And the night before I left my home, I wrote a letter to my senator. That's James Pearson of Kansas.
WBAI, New York.
It's very difficult to write a letter so extremely important to me, and I hope to my country because I am afraid some mistake might be made in its interpretation. For several years now, our involvement in Vietnam has been of a prime concern of mine, as it should be for all. I have spent considerable time studying the history of our involvement, the development of our policies concerning this problem, and its current trends. My conclusion, sir, is that we have made a horrible mistake, a mistake that has cost not just billions of tax dollars, but what is most important is that it has cost thousands of lives, both American and Vietnamese. Since life is the most precious gift that God has given us, it seems to me that before a country requires a man to face the possibility of death, it should give him a very clear and definite reason. This, I believe, our administration has failed to do. So often I have wished that I could approach our president and ask him to please give me the answers to several questions which I believe are so important. I have wanted to ask him why the elections were never held, the Geneva Conference set up, why we fired at Tonkin Gulf, why it appears that the military-industrial complex has so much power in government policy, why we believe that the number of lives sacrificed has been worth it, why we believe that our democratic ideal is so right for the Vietnamese people. Since I have already stated my opinion concerning our involvement, I am sure you understand the answers I hold to these questions and others like them. This is also very important to me because I do love my country. I love the freedom it has given me. It has allowed my family to grow happily. It has allowed me to receive the type of education I desire and to choose a profession I wish to engage in. It has allowed my mother to raise her family in a joyful environment, and it has allowed my father to speak freely to his congregation. These are only a few of the reasons I have for respecting, loving, and wishing to spend the rest of my life in this country. There is, however, a conflict, for you see, this country, which has allowed me to hold and express my opinions publicly, has now placed me in a situation where I could be tried and jailed for these beliefs. In a few days, I will be leaving for Vietnam, and I am going not because in any way I believe that what we are doing is right there, but because this is what my government is now requiring me to do in order to spend the rest of my life here. But I must also stand up for what I believe in, and for this reason, unless in some way or by someone I can be shown that what I believe in is wrong, then I will not be able to participate in any offensive actions. So this freedom of belief may lead to a restriction of my physical freedom. I urge you, sir, to please do with all within your power to aid in ending this confusion. Peace means so very much. Thank you for your time.
I think that's... I think that's what we're trying to say here today. Peace means so very much. Unfortunately, we will not have time for any more questions. It's my understanding the AmeriCal division is going to be walking out in just a moment if we don't leave the stage. Good day.
Oh, wait till he gets home, lady.
WBAI, listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio in New York City at 99.5 FM. We'll be continuing with the next panel of the Winter Soldier investigation. That will include members of the AmeriCal division. We'll do that in just a moment. First, we'd like to remind you, if this is the first time or one of the few times that you've listened to WBAI, if you tuned in especially to hear the Winter Soldier investigation, you've probably noticed that WBAI is unlike any other radio station. You haven't heard any commercials. That's because we're a listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio station. This is WBAI, listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio in New York City, 99.5 FM. We continue now with the Winter Soldier investigation. This next panel includes members from the AmeriCal division.
The AmeriCal division was formed in 1967 out of three separate brigades. It's stationed in I Corps area with its headquarters at Chu Lai.
Hey, that fat woman is disrupting this thing. Why don't we have her ejected? Can't we do something legally or something?
My name is Barry Romo. I'm a former first lieutenant. I'm a former first lieutenant with the 196th Light Infantry Brigade and also the 11th Infantry Brigade. I was commissioned when I was 19 years old and served as a battalion S2, which is an intelligence officer, and as an infantry platoon leader. During this discussion, we are not going to dwell on the atrocities that were committed by my unit or by Americans in Vietnam that has been rehashed. We will give a short testimony about some of the things we did see and then try to go into the reasons behind them. When I arrived in country, one of the first things I saw was the pacification program, which consisted of moving or forcing villagers to leave their homes and bringing them to the coast so as to deny them to the communists. These people were forced out of their homes. I saw the use of artillery fire against civilian targets because of the possibility of VC, with no regard taken for the Vietnamese. I saw rice stolen from Vietnamese because it was considered too much for them to have. I also saw a general racist attitude by most Americans towards the Vietnamese.
My name is William Bazanson. I was a BFC in the 11th Infantry Brigade, Vietnam. I was also with the 123rd Aviation Battalion, and we supported such actions as My Lai, the Quang Nai Valley. Quang Nai Valley had many incidents of villages being wiped out because the North Vietnamese may use them for food. But like he said, we're not here to dwell on these subjects today. The reasons for all these things taking place are the reason, or that's the reason we're up here today. There's been enough rehashing of incidents such as My Lai. To me, the greatest guilt that any man can suffer is that he die without a good reason. And to me, Vietnam is not a good enough reason, not when we're destroying the Vietnamese land, property, and publis. We're destroying the very moral fiber of this country at the same time. And those of us that do put our principles above personal ambition are labeled communists by the very people that send us over there. These people that run around here waving flags, trying to disrupt our meeting, all we're trying to do is we're asking you to give us enough respect. We lost friends, arms, legs, and sometimes lives in Vietnam because you sent us over there. We're only asking that you give us enough respect to listen to us.
My name is Ron Polisari. I was with the AmeriCal Division, 198th Infantry Brigade, 1st of the 6th Infantry. One of the first rather shocking things that happened to me while I was over there, I served from October of 1967 to September of 1968. And for the first maybe 3 months, I was rather inactive as far as any enemy contact. I mean, we had, you know, light sniper fire, this sort of thing, but nothing really big. And then one time we're coming up, you know, walking down the trail, you know, it was really not much of any mission except just to see what was out there, you know, and if there was anything to be had to get it. And we'd come across two Viet Congs by a well drinking water, and they had fired at them, and they naturally, you know, taken off, ran, and we never did get them. And there was a small hooch nearby with a bunker, and I did not see this personally, but later on, the guys were bragging about it. Some of the other men, they had, in Vietnamese, yelled down the bunker, "Is anyone there?" And that's simultaneously while they're yelling this, they drop a grenade in. I went up to the bunker later. There was a, I think what was a little boy and a little girl killed, and there was an old lady in there. And the feelings that I had were rather mixed. I was, you know, rather shocked, you know, because they were bragging about this. They thought it was rather humorous. But at the same time, it seemed to be more or less something that was socially acceptable. We weren't really, you know, concerned that, you know, these were little kids, but that what we were concerned with is that they had slanted eyes, were Vietnamese, and that was enough to justify it. It was just, you know, well, that's war. I had written a friend of mine that was also in the Army in Nam at that time, and I told him about this incident. And I'd like to read you his reply and show you that, you know, this was not only a feeling among our company, among myself, but universally feelings of the men, Americans, over there. What he said was, you guys are killing off kids, huh? Ain't no big thing. They're the same. I hate all these gooks, VC or not. And that pretty well exemplifies how Americans feel. It's rather unfortunate. I really feel ashamed of myself. I find it embarrassing to admit that I am a Vietnam veteran. And this was only, you know, one of many sort of incidences. It was nothing as huge as My Lai, or maybe nothing as drastic as torture or anything like that. They probably died instantly, but it was still three human lives. Another type of thing that goes on is we were in a valley, and I think we had nicknamed it AK Valley after the AK-47 because we were getting every once in a while sniper fire, and you can tell when it's an AK-47 because it makes kind of like a popping sound when it fires. It's like a crack. And we had CIDGs working with us. And CIDGs are the civilian...
Civilian Independent Defense Group.
Okay. And they had spotted, they were like our point men, more or less, and they had spotted an NVA, presumably carrying a weapon, I guess it must have been, and they had fired on him, they'd blown off the top of his head. And then one of the CIDGs had cut off one of his ears, and I understand that according to Buddhism, unless your body is complete, you cannot go to where it is, wherever it is that the Buddhas go to after they die. So they had done this, and as we walked by, you know, everyone thought it was, you know, it was kind of cool to see this head there that was, you know, half gone to begin with, and then have the ear sliced off, and there was just like a, you know, it was flat with a small hole left on the side of the head.
If we could please keep it quiet in the back of the hall, if you could show some respect, please. If you could please show some respect and keep the noise down in the back of the hall. If you could also clear the aisleway.
This feeling that we had that it was, you know, a rather humorous incident, or, you know, looked upon as, you know, being a good thing, and we were really men because not only that the CIDG had done this, but because, you know, it was an act that we would have liked to have perpetrated ourselves, I think. It's something, you know, it's more or less condoned, and you really, over there, and the feelings that you have, the policies of the military, that this is really, you know, a thing to be manly about. Another, not the same sort of incidents, but this is more dealing with lack of medical attention to a Vietnamese peasant. We had come across a rice paddy, and someone had said that they had seen two VC in the rice paddy carrying weapons. And I was an M79 man at the time, and they called all M79 men up front, so naturally I go up front, and they told me this, and they had fired at them. There's two big boulders in this rice paddy, and these two VC were supposed to be behind this boulder. So I lobbed some M79s behind the boulder, and we went back there later on to see, you know, if anything, you know, there'd be anything there. So when we get back there, all we found was a Vietnamese peasant farmer with a sickle in his hand, or laying next to him. His thigh was broken by an M16 bullet, and his spine was hit with shrapnel from the M79. He had passed out in the sun. We had waited for about 2 hours for a medevac to come out and pick him up. But when the chopper came, it wasn't a medevac. It was just a regular chopper. He had just been laying there in the sun, and he'd passed out a few times, and I'm not even sure if they gave him morphine. I know they wrapped his leg up, and that was about the extent of any medical attention that he got while we were with him. I need some water.
I'm Jim Weber. I was formerly a sergeant. I was also in Ron's platoon, and I can kind of verify what he's saying in case anyone kind of doubts it. It's a lot of stuff happened like that, especially the things about the medical attention and things like that. I remember there was one, I was in two different battalions. I was in the 1st of the 6th and the 1st of the 46th. In the 1st of the 46th, there was one isolated example. Like we say, we can go all day on rapping about war atrocities, but okay, anyhow, right. We had surrounded this village and went into it on the north side. We had taken one Vietnamese suspect, Viet Cong suspect, and you know, kept him with us. About 15 minutes later, we found another one who was hiding in a bunker underneath his hooches. Now I have a lot of pictures and things here that we didn't have time to get blowed up that I can verify this with. The second one that we found is, come on up here. Yeah, come on up here.
No. Come on up after the testimony, not now.
Let the woman give a parliamentary
rebuttal. Oh, look,
rebuttal,
this is the people
please.
We're trying to get at, right? Okay, yeah, I can dig it.
I'd like to ask the woman that our time is limited and so is hers. Thank you.
I hear ya. Now we had... Here you are.
Thought she was interested in seeing the testimony.
Okay.
These are the kind of people that sent us over there.
No, I'm not trying to seem like a star. I'm trying to. The people are laughing, man. The people should not laugh.
Hey,
could we get
go.
Some security to have this
here
woman
go,
removed, please?
All right, now listen. Hey.
Is
she disrupting
country.
It?
Yeah.
Okay, now here's the picture that I want to show you, okay? It's a picture of a GI holding up a head. Here's a picture of a GI holding up a head.
Okay, come on, now hold it up. Hey, bro, come on, hold it up. Now look, this is a testimony here, and we're talking about, you know, everything that happened over in Vietnam. Now look, people like this are sick.
Listen,
man.
Like,
you gotta realize they're sick, and you don't laugh at them, and you know, you don't joke around about things like that. That's why we're here right now, we're trying to help them.
Hey, babe, is this working, man? Does this work? Can you hear me?
Let's continue with the testimony.
Thank you.
I can't, man. My thing doesn't work, man.